Welcome to the Revive, Wake Up, and Win podcast. My name is Medine, and I'm your host. This podcast features ordinary people with extraordinary stories about overcoming and making a difference. I firmly believe with little faith in God and the fight in the human spirit, you, my friends, can wake up and win. Right before I left, a man stood up and shot and killed another man right in front of me. This really happened. This was in Las Vegas, Nevada in 2016. Welcome to the Wake Up and Win podcast. And today we're going to talk about Starbucks and anxiety. They both go together, don't they? So I'm here with John Santos.
Thank you. Thank you for this episode. I'm excited for you to jump into this one, man.
Yeah, I know it's been a while. Everybody has been asking me about this every time I talk to them. Not every time. A lot of times that I talk to people, they bring up this story and they ask for me to dive in a little bit more. And I feel like anytime you go through something hard in your life, it's not just for you to go through it. It's for other people and for them to know how to maybe in their own life overcome something that's really hard. Especially when it brings you a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear, a lot of trauma, and how to overcome that and become a better person. That's the whole point. And this story and what I'm going to talk about today is highlighting that, so that way you can take the best parts of it and some of the mistakes I made and make your own decision in life to be a better person. So whether you're in high school dealing with a big test coming up, or you are looking for a new job or moving to a new city, I hope that this will help you overcome your anxiety in some form or fashion. I have worked at Starbucks for 6 years. I had worked at Starbucks for 6 years, from 2008 to 2013, or 7 through 13. And during those years, I never drank a sip of coffee. But right after I quit, for whatever reason, I became addicted to caffeine. So I was drinking coffee all the time. And particularly, I was drinking Starbucks all the time. I never wanted to be there when I worked there. But as soon as I quit, for some strange reason, I would always show up and end up at a Starbucks somewhere in town, particularly the one I worked at before. But anyway, I love Starbucks. I always show up. I believe in what they preach about third place environment and having a place away from home where you could study and focus or do business or chat with friends. I really bought into that whole branding, and it showed through over the years. So about 5 years removed from quitting Starbucks, I find myself in a very precarious situation, very hard situation in a Starbucks, believe it or not. And this happened in 2016, and I was working at a trampoline park as a general manager. If you would ask me if I was 10 years old, what I'd be doing when I got older, and if I told you that, I probably wouldn't believe myself either. But I was a general manager at a trampoline park. It was an amazing park. It was owned by great people, and I loved who I worked with, my staff, and the kids I worked with. But sometimes I needed a break. And this day, I really needed a break. So it was a Sunday, and Sundays are busy days, meaning there's a lot of parties coming in, a lot of parents that are ready to yell at you about nothing. And so before I went in and took the abuse, I was like, you know what? Let me go to my favorite place, Starbucks, which was right across the street. So I went in, sat down, got my order, finished my food, and almost left. Then, right before I left, a man stood up and shot and killed another man right in front of me. This really happened. This was in Las Vegas, Nevada in 2016. And when he did this, I thought this had to be some kind of like punked, or I must be on some kind of a hidden camera TV show. I didn't believe it. I was shocked at what I saw. But it happened. It was all real. And after that, after he shot the gentleman, he looked at me with this incredulous look on his face, or not believing what I was doing. And I didn't know what was going to happen. So I'm just staring back at him. And it dawned on me that I was the only one still sitting up and everybody else was on the floor. And so I jumped to the floor and I laid down there. I stayed there, silently praying and doing my best to calm myself down. So he started to reload his gun. And as he did, there was one of the employees calling the police department, telling them who the what the description was of the gentleman in the store. And while he did that, the gunman made a phone call as well. So gave conflicting descriptions of who the perpetrator was to the police, which put us in a bad situation because now the police cannot enter in that situation unless they know exactly who they're dealing with and what's going on. So that being the case, the man finally finished reloading his gun and everybody gasped at the same time because he was going to continue. And in that moment, he pointed back at again to try to shoot and the gun jammed. So it didn't work. He was stunned by it. We all were stunned. And he got frustrated with the weapon, so he dropped it, and he walked outside, and the police were waiting for him, and just walked out with his hands up. When he walked out, I went and tried to save that man's life. So I went around the counter, and I tried to lock the door, but we couldn't find the key, so we didn't know if he was going to come back or not. But ultimately, I was on the floor with this gentleman trying to bring him back to life and give CPR that I learned 30 days before this happened for my job. And he ended up passing away in my arms. And it was one of the most tragic moments in my life. And his face is burned into my memory forever. And it was a horrific situation. But I'm happy I'm alive. I got out of there. Nothing happened to me or any other one of the employees. Thank God for that. And it was one of those life-altering moments. I took a stock and inventory of my life before that and felt like I had not done anything that I wanted to do or live the way that I wanted to. And it came to a harsh reality of that because of the fact that this had happened to me and so abruptly and so quickly. So I wanted to make something positive out of it because that was my reaction. So I helped in front of a camera and I asked the detective, is it okay to say something to the people? And he said, it's totally your choice. He's under our apprehension, so it's your call. So I made the call, got in front of a camera, and I just said what was on my heart. And that was that you can't expect anything in life. Tomorrow is not promised. So just love and forgive the people who are in your life as much as you can, and know that you really don't have any control, so you might as well try to enjoy the life that you have. You can't control some crazy person decides to do something horrible, or if the day is going to happen to be one of those days that you get in an accident or anything like that. And God willing, none of that happens, but it's a reality and a fact of life. So it needs to be dealt with. It needs to be addressed. Because it happens anyway, whether we speak about it or not. But if you have a tool to get around it and to get past something like that that may have happened in your own life, I would like to provide that today. So that is essentially the story of how it went down. Now, after hopping on the TV and saying something to the cameras, the next day, my face was on New York Daily News, was on Yahoo, was all over local TV, major outlets, and other articles and publications. I was completely shocked that had happened. Mostly the story got out, but not the message I was trying to get to the world. But social media was there, and Facebook, this is one thing I will commend about Facebook, that a message spreads fast, good or bad. And what I said did resonate, and a lot of people did sort of take heart to that.
I remember that. And to backtrack a little bit, I was sitting at home at the time with my brother, and Medine just calls and says, dude, I can't tell you anything more. Just call my sister and let her know I'm okay. And I said, what's going on? Is this like a punk show? Like I thought he was playing a prank on me. And he's like, no, dude, there's a bomb squad out here. There's somebody just got shot. I can't say anything more. Just turn on the TV and tell my sister that I'm okay. And at that moment, I flip it to the news channels, and literally, they shut down an entire block because the guy had placed a bomb threat. He said that there was a bomb located inside the Starbucks or somewhere in a backpack, or, and he also gave a description that didn't match who the suspect was. So essentially the cops were blocking all of the streets surrounding the Starbucks, and nobody could go in and get medical help to Medine and the people inside. The guy died in Medine's arms. And this whole time, the cops didn't know who the suspect was. So I was worried that Medine was going to get shot. And at that time, I was like, oh, man, if they don't know who this guy is, you know, for all they know, it's Medine. You know, like, he's bloodied with his shirt blood because obviously the guy was in his arms. And we were just praying that everything was turned out okay. And luckily, yeah, it was, there was no bomb there. There was no, there was no other casualties. And after that, it was just a very, to me, seeing Medine like that, it really put him in a situation where he was a different person. He wasn't the same Medine I knew a month before that. He was a more, if I could describe it, it was more of like a schizophrenic Medine. Like that would kind of describe it a little bit. He was very paranoid a little bit. He was scared that maybe this was mafia related and somebody was going to come out and get him since he saw the suspect and he witnessed that. So it was all scary stuff, and he had the right to be scared. This was a traumatizing situation. So yeah, it's the first time that I seen Medine in a scared way, and then just those months leading after that was something that I'll never forget. You know, just the way that you overcame that. So he really has a message for people out there that have dealt with it or probably gone through a traumatic situation. Crazily enough, that happened, I want to say, in October or something, right?
Yeah, September of
2016. And then literally a year later, we have the massacre. We have the massacre here in Vegas. The 59 people died. And, you know, it was like almost a year to the date. And then I finally understood how many people are probably going to be impacted because of that. Because what I saw through Medine go through, the his way of carrying himself after that, the scaredness, everything that he was going through after that event happened, once that October 1st shooting happened, I was able to really, really understand the impact that, and the impact of the lives of the survivors, the impact of the lives of the people that were lost. It's not just a number count out there. It's not just 59 dead or 500 injured. Like, those are statistics. But in reality, there's millions of people that are probably suffered because of that, because they saw that and they saw what happened, and it brought anxiety back to them. You know, maybe even an anxiety that they don't want to go out in public. They don't want to go out to the hotels. They don't want to go to a Starbucks. Every time a traumatizing situation happens and somebody sees it, you never really know what spirit the other person is in that is witnessing it. Doesn't matter if they're not in that situation, just by the fact that they're witnessing it, it's bringing back some type of trauma to them. So
absolutely, man. Yeah, it definitely affected me. And in watching what happened to all those other folks at the October 1 shooting, I saw a mirror, and I saw how they were impacted. And when I say they, it's us, you know, this is our city, but it was heavy on everyone's heart. It the one positive I can, or silver lining I could probably draw from that whole thing, is it did bring us together as a city. I don't think we really had an identity as a city before October 1. Yeah. If I were to look and tell somebody, you know, what the Golden Knights are, or you know, it's a worldwide brand now. Mm-hmm. Then we got all the way to the championship, and we're doing great this year. But that's something that that came from that darkness, was this unification and people not knowing each other, but having a sense of familiarity, a sense of fraternity, a love, you know, mm-hmm. for one another, and having, you know, everyone wearing the jerseys and all the corner stores and gas stations and nurse's office and everywhere you go wearing the same thing. It definitely was a really powerful experience as well, you know, so it never can bring back those who were lost, and, you know, rest in peace to them. Our prayers and love goes out to their families. But I don't think it ever does get easier. You just learn to live with it, you know, and it goes back to my situation where during those months I did feel a lot of paranoia. I understood what that actually meant. And when you, and I also did, I couldn't keep track of time. I was a little bit on edge all the time. You know, I have a personality, like I mentioned before in another podcast, where I like to laugh and I like to be cool about things, but they do affect me just like everybody else in their own way. But as I was going through that time, what happens is a strange phenomenon happens when you go through something horrific. It makes you grab at things. When you fall down, you start grabbing at whatever's around you, you know, in order to hold yourself up. And so when you go through something horrific, it's almost like you're falling down. So in your mind and in your soul, you start reaching for whatever's around you to keep you grounded, to keep you on your feet, to keep you moving forward. And I think that is probably, my humble opinion, one of the ways to deal with anxiety, that you got to find something to hold on to. And it may be a close family member, a child, or it could be something like, for me, it's salsa dancing. You know, for whoever's out there, whatever you have a passion for, throw yourself into it. You got to kind of find a way to get past those moments, because that's exactly what I did. Now, I don't have tons of money and super successful, but I can say that, you know, I'm alive and I'm of sound mind because of that. One thing that's big for me that I'll share with all of you is my faith in God and in Jesus Christ. I'm a Christian, I'm a Catholic, that's how I believe. And that sustained me through, that faith sustained me through that ordeal and through many others that have gone down in my life. And I hang my hat on that. At the end of the day, I go back to the basics of when I was a kid and the things that my parents taught me about God and about having love for one another and for God. And you, once you go through a situation that kind of breaks your reality, opens you wide up, you go back to those basic principles as a kid, and it makes you see them much more in a real light, in a concrete way. So my spiritual aspect, I would always suggest that to everybody who's listening, that to find it in some form of way. And that is the answer in my book. Along with that came the fact that I have, when we go, I've talked about my family before on my podcast and how they make fun of me and all that, but I have an incredible family. I have an incredible family that's very loving, that was super supportive and was checking on my mental, and I'm super grateful for that. Which leads me into my next concrete thing that will definitely help you get through that kind of trauma, or if you just broke up with a girlfriend, you have an emotional trauma, or got cheated on, or, you know, going to lose your house or something. Gratitude. It's been talked about a lot, but having gratefulness for all the little things help you get through horrific events as well and make you a lot more strong. I'll give you a little example of that. When I went through that experience, what I decided to do on my own was I go to a local gym, and every day when you go into the gym, you pass all these bushes, and the bushes have little blossoms of blue flowers on them. And so I decided what I was going to do was every day I go to that gym, I'm also getting healthier and the gym helps, but every day that I go to that gym, I'm going to take a photo and stop and stare at those flowers for at least a minute. That way it won't be too burdensome or too belabored if I try to stay there for 5 minutes and meditate and all that other stuff. I just wanted to have something small that would give me a little bit of gratitude. And it goes back to, you know, in awe of creation and God and all that. And it really helped. It really helped. It's something that, it's not to sneeze at. It's something that really showed me that there's something to live for, and that you can be excited about things and be in awe and take in beauty that's all around you that people pay for and they, you know, that it gets lost on us. But So that's another main point I would say is being grateful.
So then when it comes to, obviously there's a lot of people that are dealing with it. Perhaps somebody listening to this right now is has a lot of anxiety. Maybe they can't be around crowds of people or it's hard for them to be vulnerable and actually express who they are. What would you say to those kind of people, and what type of things could they do to start kind of going back into a flow that's more welcoming and inviting?
Yeah, I would definitely say, with all the love, I would say, you know, you have to make a choice, because even as a Christian and as a believer and all that, we still believe and hold that you have freedom of choice to live, you know. And if you decide at some point that you don't want to live anymore, you don't want to partake, you don't want to try and go through adventures and trials and overcome, your choice will be made for you by yourself, you know. And so I can't necessarily make that choice for you, and you can't, and any positive speaker, priest, any person besides you cannot make that choice. You have to make the decision that I want to live, I want good things, I want to grow and get past this moment, you know. And once you start there, you start small, and you just take on the little tasks. Like I mentioned, those flowers, you may have something in your room that brings you a little bit of joy, or a song that you like to play, or whatever it is. Hang on to those things, and just like a little kindling in a fire in the middle of the forest when it's cold out, you got to find a way to get a spark and search for it and try to move from there. So that would be the main thing I would say. So,
and then for everybody else that, you know, there's a lot of people that I'm sure look at some of these mental health things like, oh, that's just weak-minded, or they were just weak-minded, right? That's what they always say, is that person was just weak. You know, like, that's probably one of the most common rebuttals to mental illness, is those people are just weak, you know, like, but it could be anybody. It could be somebody that's super successful, actors that are, you know, main celeb, you know, a lot of actors, celebrities, artists, fortunately have taken their lives or have lived through the anxiety or have dealt with those issues. And it's definitely not something that's a weak-minded. I think it happened to anybody. But can you describe what some of those feelings are, and maybe how somebody could possibly see it in somebody else, in terms of maybe one of their family members? Maybe one of their family members is going through it, but that person themselves doesn't know that family member is going through it. What are some of the signs that people could look out for, and what can they do to help?
Yeah, I would like to insert here a little plug for a nonprofit organization called NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Illness. And that is a program or a nonprofit that's designed for the family members or friends of mainly family members of people who are dealing with mental illness, including anxiety. So check out NAMI and look at the resources that they have to offer. That's something that really is helpful. They provide information on what you just asked as far as what to look for. You know, if you see somebody who is not taking care of themselves in terms of their clothes anymore, or they kind of are not speaking anymore, there's telltale signs that can be provided through that link or that website, the NAMI organization, or NAMI.org. So I would turn to that for that aspect of it. But for those who don't believe it or kind of see it as something that's insignificant or weak, as you explained, one thing I would say is that there's this wonderful song by a woman who I was absolutely in love with back in the day, that I knew I was going to marry her. But she was a famous artist named Corinne Bailey Rae. And she put out this song called "Until It Happens to You." And what she was talking about is what you go through after, mostly about a breakup and all that. And I would say check out that song. It's a great song. But the tagline of that song, or the name of that song, is really what the best way I can rebuttal to something like that. It's just like, until it happens to you, until you go through a scenario or you see somebody you know go through it, it's almost like there's a wall of understanding between that side of the argument and those who are experiencing it or are empathetic to it. So instead of hearing or experiencing it yourself, instead of, you know, going through a moment and actually getting glimpses of it, which is kind of what happened to myself. You know, I was of that mentality that, you know what, it's just being weak-minded. It's just, you know, it's your own thoughts that you're not in control of. But then once I've gone through experiences in my life that shaped me, now I understand that any strength I have is sort of a gift, you know, and that in any intellect I have, any ability or things that I'm able to do come from God, and that it needs to be cultivated, and it's for others, you know, and it's not for me to look down on them, but it's to lift them up, you know. And that's what I would challenge those people who think like that, who have strong minds per se, to understand what their gift is and what its purpose is, not to kind of let it turn in on itself, because it can happen with anything. Somebody who's really intellectual can become so intellectual that they think they know everything. Somebody who's really good at, you know, making money can become greedy. I mean, anything can be, any good thing can be spoiled. So there's nothing wrong with being strong-minded, but there is an error in thinking there. And I would challenge them to open up their mind and heart to some education, you know, as to what really goes on and what they can do to help. Because if you're even saying that, if you're even at a place in your life where, you know, you're telling people it's just they're of weak mind, or, you know, that they're of that mentality, if you're of that mentality, it shows that you're kind of deprived a little bit of some kind of love yourself. You know, so you need something too. You need help too. We all do. So these are the main things that I feel will help somebody who's going through anxiety and dealing with it, is grounding yourself in things of beauty, things that you love, things that you're passionate about, and throwing yourself into it. Because a lot of times you can use that anxiousness, yeah, to propel you in other arenas. And another thing I would say is having gratitude for the good things you have in your life, for the people who are around you. And lastly, anybody who's on the outside looking in, take the time to understand what's really going on instead of just going on about your day, because it's worth it. It will enhance your life, not be a burden to you, and not hold you back from whatever you think, whatever you're working towards. It'll only enhance your life. So those are the three points that I would mainly say. And also know that you're loved. Know that you're loved. When you know that, it changes the way that you act and live. So take some time meditating on that thought. So all of you listeners out there, I hope that this is of value to you. I hope that it changes your life in a positive way and makes you and everyone you know wake up and win. Thanks for listening. My hope is for you to take away insight, information, and most importantly, inspiration from this podcast. You can find us on Spotify, iTunes, and on the Anchor app. Also, if you have a story that you want to share, reach out. Send us an email to the address in the description. Don't forget to follow us on social media at Instagram/Revive Brand Co. and check out our website, www.revivebrandco.com. Wake up and win.